Two afternoons on News Talk 770. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can call me at 403-974-8255 or toll free at 1-800-563-7770. You can also shoot me a text to 770-770, and I'm really curious what you think about, well, you know, all the topics we're doing here, but especially this next one, because a lot of people, when Ontario a few months ago rolled out its sex ed curriculum, announced it to the public. It'll be implemented in September. There was a lot of widespread panic. There were protests. There were rallies. There were people saying, you know what, I'm going to do homeschooling. And the reason why was because a lot of parents felt sort of handicapped by the fact that they couldn't really do anything else to manage what their kids were learning about sex from as young as grade one. And anytime any province in Canada, including Alberta, has done an overhaul or an upgrade to the sex ed curriculum, there's been a lot of question, there's a lot of debate about it. There is, I think, a lot of a concern that's warranted, others that aren't, but it's all part and parcel of the same thing, which is that I think parents need to take more of an active role in all education for their kids, but especially when you're dealing with something as contentious and subjective, based on values, beliefs, etc., as sex ed. But one of the really interesting things that is not taken into consideration, and this was noted in Ontario and it's been noted outside of Ontario as well, about sex ed curriculums is the absence of love. They teach sex in a purely, not even a purely biological way. They teach it in terms of a social and societal way. They teach sex in terms of the repercussions of it. But they don't talk about, at least not by any accounts of these curriculums and the way they're taught, about the idea of sex when combined with love, and more importantly, about sex when dealt with in the manner of as part of a marriage. And Peter John Mitchell wrote a piece in the National Post to this effect last week, and he cites the fact that almost 88% of Canadian teens say they expect to marry someday, calling marriage the gold standard for family formation, and he says it's time that sex ed reflect these numbers. Joining me on the line is Peter John Mitchell, a researcher with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. Peter, it's great to have you on the program, sir.
Well, thanks for having me on, Andrew.
So let's talk about the number that you came to as far as teens expecting to marry someday, because I hadn't heard this before.
Yeah, so that's from some research done by a sociologist at the University of Lethbridge. It's a couple years old, but about 88% of teens, when they look forward into the future, say that they anticipate that they'll find themselves in a married relationship. Now, many of those teens won't marry, and you know, things change as you get older, but it's still quite a significant majority of teens are looking towards the future, looking towards permanent relationships, lifelong love, and as you said, the curriculum doesn't seem to reflect this or connect it. We're also seeing a time when the age of first marriage is increasing in Canada, and the age of first marriage for men in Canada is about 31, it's about 29 for women. So you have this almost a decade, over a decade actually, of dating experience, and the question is, how do you get from here to there? How do you get teens from their experience in high school to the kind of relationships that they say they want to have someday? Is there some sort of script to follow? How do they know how to get there?
One of the questions that I wanted to get a better sense of here is, were the motivations for why teens wanted to get married taken into consideration with that research? Because I would just be curious, I mean, what the contributing factor is or what the contributing factors are for that.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know that too. I think part of it is that some of that is modeled. They see that around them. You think of shows like, you know, in popular culture, like The Bachelorette or something like that talks about marriage being the goal, a wedding proposal at the end of the show. So certainly there is still some scripting, I think, in our culture about moving towards having, you know, the house, the kids, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that sort of that white picket fence nuclear family.
So I'm sure that sort of plays to it. Some of it might reflect some of the experiences that students have as well. And that's one of the things that researchers have found and published data on this suggests that the kind of family that you experienced growing up isn't necessarily destiny, but it certainly does inform the kind of relationships that teens form later, but also the kind of relationships that they form in their teen years and their sexual behavior during their teen years. So students that come from homes that tend to be a little more stable tend to reflect that in their kind of relationship building, tend to be less likely to be involved in what we'd say non-romantic sexual relationships during their teen years. Teens that experience maybe more instability at home, that kind of experience would be correlated to less stability, to more non-romantic sexual activity.
So are there any provinces in Canada of which you're aware that do take into consideration this idea of teaching love as it connects to sex and teaching marriage as it connects to those two things as well? Or is this just completely a blind spot in provincial sex ed curriculums?
Well, I'm certainly not familiar with all the provincial curriculums, and in fact, I think in Quebec, I'm not sure there's even a standard curriculum like there is in Ontario.
Quebec. I mean, it's Quebec, I guess. So we got to take that with a grain of salt. But yeah, Quebec teaches sex ed in a very odd way. They sort of incorporate it into other classes. So I'm not sure if it's like, you know, they're talking about, you know, math class, and all of a sudden they switch into something else. Who knows?
Sure, and I remember back in the dark ages of my own high school training, there being something that talked about marriage, but I don't think it was connected to sex ed or that nature. The reason why I think it's probably important to connect it to sexual health and to sex ed is that we know through data and through research that the kind of behavior that teens engage in during their teen years does affect later romantic partnerships and romantic developments and that kind of thing. It's almost as if those teen years are a little bit of a training ground for intimacy. And so I think it's good if we're going to talk about sex, we're going to talk about these other aspects of sex, then we need to talk about where is this going, where is this leading, and how does this connect to future long-term relationships like marriage that teens say that they want. And I think that's the responsible thing to do, is to give them this information. They can do with it what they want. Again, not everybody will move towards marriage or will want marriage, and that's fine, but I think we should at least give them the information so that they can make informed decisions.
Well, and I guess it really comes back to needing to understand what the purpose of sex ed is, because I think it used to be a matter of, you know, teach the basics, teach how the plumbing works, so to speak, and teach people that, and then that get into, okay, well, if we're teaching the behavior, we need to talk about, you know, the consequences of that behavior, then it becomes, okay, now we need to talk about, you know, how to protect yourself against this, and now we've evolved from that into teaching about, you know, gender identity, teaching about homosexuality, teaching about birth control, teaching about consent, teaching about, like, it's evolved and become this years-long process now, and my issue that I have with this is that I think there's been a departure from what sex ed was originally supposed to be about, which was a biological lesson. And if you were to look at sex ed in simply those terms, I think that what you are advocating for would be unnecessary. But given that we have gone the route of talking about it in all of these other contexts and talking about, you know, what it's going to be like when you have sex for the first time at 16, I mean, it needs to be taught, I think, alongside this other element, which clearly is in demand by teens when they're asked about it.
Yeah, I think it's probably important to realize sort of the concept that you're talking about. And when I speak with parents, I tell them, you know, when we're talking about sexuality health, we're talking about a very broad concept that encapsulates like self-concept into an understanding oneself and identity and those sorts of things, so that parents have an understanding of what is being taught. And so in that context, I think it does make some sense to talk about this. I would say that, and I think research bears this out, I'm confident research bears this out, that parents are the primary sexuality educators, both in what they model.
Good parents, anyway.
Yeah, I think even bad parenting does send a message as well. But hopefully parents are being involved. When we survey parents, we find that they do suggest that they are confident in communicating to their kids. They want to communicate to their kids, but they might lack some of the information or some of the ways about how to go about it. They want more information on that, but they feel confident that they understand that that's their role, which is surprising to some people. And in fact, there's been some surveying in the U.S. That suggests that teens there, and I would expect reflected here in Canada as well, that teens say that the number one influence on their sexual decision making is their families, is their parents, and that doesn't necessarily seem intuitive to us, but the research continually bears that out. So parents shouldn't underestimate the kind of role that they have, and certainly when it comes to family life, I think these things get modeled, whether it's the family of origin or whether it's, you know, extended family or other friends and mentors. These things definitely get modeled out in addition to, you know, what's covered in the classroom, which seems to be ever expanding. And it's interesting, I was involved in a panel discussion on the Ontario sex ed curriculum, and one of the sexual health providers suggested that in their best case scenario, they would move the biology out to science class and cover everything else within sex ed. And that was kind it was a bit of a head scratcher, but it kind of gets that, it kind of helps develop that idea of, okay, what's really going on here? What are we trying to cover in class, and what are we hoping to accomplish here?
We've got to take a quick break here. I'm chatting with Peter John Mitchell, a senior researcher with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, and we'll continue that discussion when we come back in just a couple of moments. But I also wanted to hone in on this other part of the discussion, which is what I brought up a couple of seconds ago, which is, what is the purpose of sex ed? Because, yeah, I mean, Peter and I both agree that parents need to play a more active role here. And you don't hear a lot of public discussion, certainly not on radio, about sex. And I'm sorry if it jolted you a little bit, but I'm not sorry. Because we need to look at the fact that, look, there is a group that is, and it's not a singular group, but there's a movement that is trying to make sex something that is taught more and more with encouragement and less with the values that most of us were raised with. And some people might see us as the old-fashioned dinosaurs, and I don't think this is about imposing a sense of morality on people. I think this is about recognizing that, hey, there is a breakdown in the institution of family, and this is something that needs to be addressed, and it needs to really go back to the source of when and how students are being taught about sex. And, well, that's happening in schools now, not in homes. So we need to have a curriculum that reflects public attitudes. We'll be right back with more Afternoons on News Talk 770. I'm Andrew Lawton. Stay with us.
Let the Toronto 2015 games begin. And the savings. Save 2 cents per liter at Esso stations when you swipe your Esso Extra or Aeroplan card in-store during the Pan Am Games, July 10th to 26th. 2 cents per liter savings at Esso.
Markets have fallen 6% in the last 3 months with a lot of uncertainty, Greece, China, oil, but our portfolios have seen positive returns.
If you wonder if you'll have enough to retire, join the Popowich Carmeli Advisory Group at our seminar, July 28th, 7 p.m. at the Crowfoot Co-op Wine and Spirits.
Learn about our five-pillar investment strategy designed to help make money regardless of market direction.
Register today by calling 966-8400 or on the web at pkag.ca.
CIBC Wood Gundy is a division of CIBC World Markets Inc., a subsidiary of CIBC and member of CIPF and IROC.
Before you tried to prune your own trees.
My trees!
After you tried to prune your own trees.
My trees!
Want your trees to look their best? Get ArborCare Tree Service, maintaining Calgary's trees since 1983.
ArborCare.com. Got trees? Get us.
Your personal guide through Calgary's select businesses. This is Business Showcase.
When you want it just right, choose Benjamin Moore's Regal Select for premium performance, smooth application, and stain resistance. Find it at Annalyn Decorating Center, your choice for quality products and service. Annalyn Decorating, just off Richmond Road.
Looking for a Jeep Cherokee? Check out the highly desirable Trailhawk at Country Chrysler in High River. Tons in stock with financing from just 3.49%. CountryChrysler.com.
All year, the Mustard Seed provides basic services, housing, and employment programs to men and women in need. Thousands come through the doors of the Mustard Seed seeking support. Give the gift of hope. Go to theseed.ca.
There are many ways you can help the animals at the Cochrane Humane Society. Donate online, donate in the memory of a loved one, even donate your car. Become a foster home for a needy animal. Help out today at cochranehumane.ca.
Summer means adventure, and adventure means Mercedes-Benz. Whether you're camping, biking, or taking a spontaneous road trip this summer, the Mercedes-Benz GLK 250 is perfect for your summer adventures. Standard features include 3,500-pound towing capacity, power tailgate, and 7.0 litres per 100-kilometre highway fuel efficiency. Drive one today from 0.9% and get $3,000 in cash credit. Come and see what's different at Lone Star Mercedes-Benz.
I'm Darcy Curl in the News Talk 770 News Center. The City of Calgary receives a AA-plus credit rating from Standard & Poor's, and a home in Bowness is destroyed by fire. These stories and more coming up at 2.
(403) 974-8255 or toll free at 1-800-563-7770. Those are the numbers you can reach me at, or you can text me at 770-770. We are chatting with Peter John Mitchell, senior researcher for the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, about incorporating marriage into the sex ed curriculum. Peter, I've had a few people text me in the last few moments just wanting to confirm your position on this. Are you pushing for a sex ed curriculum that is basically predicated on abstinence only until marriage?
I think what I'm saying is that any sex education program, whether it's abstinence or whether it's comprehensive or abstinence plus or whatever the terms are, that it includes talk about where current sexual behavior in teens, where that ends up and where how that influences future relationships. I think that when we look at the data of sex ed, whether it be abstinence sex ed, whether it be comprehensive, I think what we walk away with is understanding that this is a tool to help kids, but it's really, it's not the sharpest arrow in our quiver. When we look at particularly outcomes for STIs and pregnancy, we find that sexuality health education has some impact, but it's really almost muted. In fact, New Brunswick went through the same process in the early 2000s where they redesigned their sex ed curriculum. And between 2005 and 2010, they actually saw their pregnancy rate, teen pregnancy rate increase 40%. Now, some people would say, oh, that's because they put in this sex ed curriculum and it's made kids go and have sex. I'm not sure that's the case. I think the factors around teen pregnancy are diverse and more complicated than our curriculum can actually account for. So I think it is a tool, but I don't think it's the best tool that we have or the most important tool. I think that comes from mentoring. I think it comes from relationships with mom and dad, and we have data on that that suggests the kind of relationships that a mom or a dad has with a child affects their sexual decision-making, whether that's delaying sexual activity. There's other studies that show that having that a daughter who has a close relationship with her mom is more likely to use birth control at last sexual encounter. So there is definitely some connections between parenting relationships, home environment, and sexual activity. And so whatever, getting back to your question, whatever that curriculum looks like, I think it's important to connect what's happening today with what's happening, what's going to be happening in the future and future relationships.
Yeah, and I also think that it's very important to note here that, in my eyes anyway, the reason we're not seeing a lot of the discussions about marriage and the discussions about love as it connects to sex from a sex ed perspective anyway is that you're seeing a society and certainly an education system that's moving more and more towards this idea of moral relativism, more and more towards this idea that you can't make a claim that any one way of life is right and any one way of life is wrong. So you've sort of seen this gradual evolution, although I think it's been exponentially speeding up in the last decade or so, that's basically been moving towards we can't really do anything that may seem like it might be a judgment. And I almost think that based on that alone, it's going to be an uphill battle to try to get anyone to bring it back a step to look at this idea of marriage, because marriage seems to be now, despite how it's still desirable to people, a controversial subject in so many ways.
It certainly is a controversy, and I'm aware that that proposing this is a bit controversial.
Because up until a generation ago, I mean, maybe the decline started in the 60s, obviously, but I mean, up until a generation ago, this was the norm. I mean, if we were having this discussion in 1960, someone would be like, what are these idiots talking about? Everyone knows this already. Whereas now, this is now getting people to go, oh my gosh, how dare he say that?
Right. According to the census, about 68% of census families are married families. What I think is interesting is if you contrast this with other places such as the UK or south of the border in the US, where they are having discussions about the role of marriage and about marriage education, and it's spanning the political spectrum. So people are talking about it on the left, people are talking about it on the right. There's some agreement that marriage is important. It's important not only for sort of family stability. It's important for societal stability. It has economic consequences. We're seeing actually that marriage is one of the dividing lines as the middle class sort of pulls apart, that sort of wealthier, educated people tend to get married and stay married. Those at the lower end of the middle class, less likely to. And so there's some of this discussion happening, and there might be disagreement about what to do about it, but there's at least some agreement that marriage still has some relevance to society. We're not really seeing that conversation as much here in Canada, or at all, I think. And so It is really interesting to see our hesitancy to kind of talk about the topic, and yet in other places it's being debated, and what to do about it is being debated.
Yeah, and that's obviously where, I mean, I really wanted to have this discussion, because I've seen, and I know you've seen, obviously, because you literally work in an institution devoted to studying and talking about this, that there has been an increasing level of controversy and of stigma attached to talking about things like marriage and talking about things like abstinence. And look, I mean, I don't believe we should be imposing any sort of values on other people that don't want to embrace them, but I also don't think that we should be rejecting values and avoiding them and pretending that these, you know, values or moral codes don't exist just because some people are offended by those assertions.
Yeah, I think if you go back to, again, to New Brunswick and looking at the early 2000s, they did some extensive surveying of parents about sex ed, and they found that parents were generally open to having sex education in the classroom, but they couldn't find any agreement. There was really no shared vision on the nature, the content, the timing of when things are introduced into the classroom. And so I think there's this understanding that, yep, this is part of education now in 2015, but there really isn't agreement about what that content should be. And I think you would find the same thing if we said, well, we want to inject some marriage education into this. I think there would be lots of different voices about, you know, how comfortable they are with the state taking that role, or, you know, or not that role, or, you know, who does it, what's the perspective,
yeah.
How do we address it? So
that's certainly the more pragmatic part of the discussion. I mean, the Ontario curriculum, I know, I saw this unfold, really happened without much consultation from parents, and my hope would be that, you know, here in Alberta, for example, that if this is coming up to an overhaul, that parents be the priority. I mean, kids the priority, but in terms of the discussion and consultations, that parents really play a more active role to avoid exactly what you're describing.
Yeah, I think parental consultation is really important, and that was the one thing that was certainly underdone and missing from the Ontario debate for sure, and I think we're seeing the fallout because of that. I think that's a definitely important part of reviewing these curriculums, and they will be reviewed, they will be updated, So that's important.
Peter John Mitchell, Senior Researcher for the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. Peter, really appreciate your time this afternoon. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Andrew.
All right, we've got to take...